This is disc number 8.
Richard felt a tear run down his cheek.
Shota, I feel so alone.
You brought Jebra to tell me things that gave me nightmares. I don't know what to do next. I don't. So many people believe in me, depend on me. Isn't there something you can tell me that will at least point me in the right direction before we're all lost?
With a finger, Shota lifted the tear from his cheek. That simple act somehow lifted his heart in a small way.
I am sorry, Richard. I don't know the answers that would save you. If I did, please believe that I would give them eagerly. But I know the good in you. I believe in you. I do know that you have within you what you must to succeed. There will be times when you doubt yourself. Do not give up. Remember then that I believe in you, that I know you can accomplish what you must. You are a rare person, Richard. Believe in yourself. Know that I believe you are the one who can do it.
Outside, before starting down the granite steps, she turned back, a black shape against the fading light. If Kaelin was ever real or not, no longer matters. The entire world of life, everyone's life, is now at stake. You must forget this one life, Richard, and think of all the rest.
Prophecy, Shota? Richard felt too heavy-hearted to raise his voice. Something from the flow of time?
Shota shook her head. Simply the advice of a witch woman. She started for the paddock to collect her horse.
Too much is at stake, Richard. You must stop chasing this phantom.
When Richard went back inside, everyone was crowded around Jebra, engaged in hushed conversation filled with sympathy for her ordeal.
Zed paused in the middle of what he was saying as Richard joined them.
Rather odd, don't you think, my boy?
Richard glanced around at the perplexed expressions. What's odd?
Zed spread his hands.
That somewhere in the middle of Jebra telling her story, Shota simply up and vanished.
Vanished? Richard repeated cautiously.
Nikki nodded. We thought she would stick around and have something to say after Jebra finished.
Maybe she had to go find someone to intimidate,
Kara said.
Anne sighed. Maybe she wanted to be on her way after that other witch woman.
Maybe, being a witch woman, she isn't much for goodbyes, Nathan suggested.
Richard didn't say anything. He had seen Shota do this before, like when she had shown up at his and Kaelin's wedding and given Kaelin the necklace. No one had heard her then, either, when she had spoken to Richard and Kaelin. No one had seen her leave.
Everyone went back to their conversation, except for his grandfather.
Zed looked distant and distracted.
What is it? Richard asked.
Zed shook his head as he laid his arm around Richard's shoulders, leaning closer as he spoke intimately.
For some reason, I find my mind wandering to thoughts of your mother.
My mother.
Zed nodded.
I really miss her.
Me too, Richard said.
Now that you mention it, I guess I've had her on my mind as well.
Zed stared off into the distance.
Part of me died with her that day.
It took Richard a moment to find his voice.
Do you have any idea why she went back into the burning house? Do you think there was anything important in there? Maybe someone we didn't know about?
Zed shook his head insistently. I felt sure that there had to have been some good reason, but I went through the ashes myself. His eyes welled up with tears. There was nothing in there but her bones.
Richard glanced out the door and saw the spectral shadow of Shota atop her horse start down the road without looking back.
Chapter 21. Rachel hesitated deep within the dark entrance. It was becoming difficult to see. She wished she couldn't make out what was drawn on the walls, but the fact was she could.
All the way into the cave she had tried not to look too closely at the strange scenes covering the stone walls all around her. Some of the images made goosebumps rise on her arms. She could not imagine why anyone would want to draw such horrible, cruel things. But she certainly could understand why they would put them down in the cave, why they would want to hide such dark thoughts from the light of day. The man unexpectedly shoved her. Rachel stumbled forward and fell flat on her face. She gasped a breath to regain the wind that had been so abruptly knocked out of her. She spit out dirt as she pushed herself up on her arms. She was too angry to cry. When she peeked back over her shoulder, she saw that, instead of watching her, he was gazing ahead into the darkness with those unsettling golden eyes of his, as if his mind had wandered and had forgotten all about her. Rachel glanced back toward the light, wondering if she could make it past his long legs. She reasoned that she could feign going one way and then dodge the other. That might work. But he was a lot bigger than she was, and could no doubt run faster, even if her legs hadn't been all wobbly from having been tied for so long. If only he hadn't taken her knives away from her. Still, if she was quick, she thought she might possibly be able to get enough of a start to make it. Before she had a chance to try, the man noticed her again. He seized her by the collar and hoisted her to her feet, then shoved her on ahead, deeper into the black maw of the cave. Rachel struggled to find her footing over rock outcroppings and to jump fissures. Seeing some kind of movement ahead, she paused. "Well, well," came a razor-thin voice from back in the darkness. "Visitors." The last word had been drawn out so that it almost sounded like the hiss of a snake. Rachel's skin went icy cold as she stared, wide-eyed, into the darkness, fearing who could be the owner of such a voice. Out of that darkness, as if from out of the underworld itself, a shadow materialized, gliding forward into the dim light. Shadows didn't smile, though, Rachel realized. This was a woman, a tall woman in long black robes. Her long, wiry hair, too, was black. In contrast, her skin was so pale that it made her face almost appear to be floating all by itself in the darkness. It reminded Rachel of the skin of an albino salamander that hid under leaves on the forest floor during the day, never touched by the sunlight. All of her, from the coarse black cloth of her dress to her parched flesh stretched tightly over her knuckles to her stiff hair, seemed as dry as a sun-baked carcass. She wore the kind of smile that Rachel imagined a wolf wore when dinner dropped in unexpectedly. Although her eyes were blue, it was a blue that was as blanched as her skin, so that it almost seemed that she might be blind. But the way those eyes deliberately took Rachel in left no doubt that this was a woman who could not only see just fine in the light, but probably in pitch darkness as well. "This had better be worth it," the man behind Rachel said. "The little brat stabbed me in my leg." Rachel glared back over her shoulder. She didn't know the man's name. He never bothered to tell her. Ever since capturing her, he had spoken very little, in fact, as if she were not someone but something. An inanimate object that he had merely collected. The way he had treated her made her feel like she was nothing more than a sack of grain thrown over the back of his saddle. But at that moment, the grief, fear, thirst, and hunger during the long journey were only dim annoyances in the back of her mind. "You killed Chase," she said. "You deserve more than I did." The woman frowned.
"Who?"
"The man with her."
"Ah, him," the woman in black said. "And you killed him?"
She sounded only mildly curious.
"Are you certain? Did you bury him?"
He shrugged. "I guess he's dead. Men don't recover from such wounds. The spell concealed me well enough, just as you promised it would, so he never even noticed I was there. I didn't take the time to stop and bury him, though, since I knew you wanted me back as soon as possible." Her thin smile widened.
Coming ever closer, she finally reached out and ran her long, bony fingers back through his thick hair. Her ghostly blue eyes studied him intently.
"Very good, Samuel," she cooed. "Very good."
Samuel looked like a hound that was getting scratched behind the ears.
"Thank you, mistress." "And you brought the rest of it?"
He nodded eagerly. A smile warmed his face. Rachel had thought him a cold-looking man, maybe because of his strange golden eyes. But when he smiled, it seemed to mask his nature. With that smile, he was a better-looking man than most. Although to Rachel he was, and always would be, a monster. A warm smile wasn't going to change what he had done. Samuel seemed suddenly in a good mood. Rachel hadn't ever seen him this happy. Although much of the time she'd been in a sack, tied over the back of his horse, so she supposed that she didn't really know if he'd been in a good mood or not. She didn't really care. She just wanted him dead. He had killed Chase, the best thing that had ever happened in Rachel's entire life. Chase was the best man who had ever lived. Chase had taken her in after she'd escaped from Queen Melina, the castle at Tamarang, and that terrible Princess Violet. Chase had loved her and had taken care of her. He'd taught her things about taking care of herself. He had a family he loved and who loved and needed him. But now they had all lost him. Chase was so big and so good with his weapons that Rachel hadn't thought that anyone could ever defeat him, especially not a man by himself. But Samuel had appeared like a ghost and run Chase through while he slept. Run him through with that beautiful sword that Rachel just knew couldn't belong to him. She hated to think of how he had gotten that sword and who else he'd hurt with it. Samuel stood looking like an idiot, his arms hanging, his shoulders slumped, as the woman ran her fingers back through his hair, whispering comforting, fawning words. It seemed completely unlike him. Up until then, Samuel had always seemed confident and sure of himself. He always made it clear to Rachel that he was in charge. He always knew exactly what he wanted. In the presence of this woman, though, he was different. Rachel half expected his tongue to hang out and for him to start drooling.
"You said you brought the rest of it, Samuel," she said in her hissy voice.
"Yes." He lifted an arm back toward the light. "It's on the horse."
"Well, don't leave it out there," the woman said, her voice taking on an impatient edge. "Go and get it."
"Yes, yes, right away." He seemed only too eager to do her bidding and scurried off. Rachel watched him rushing back through the cave, making his way over rocks that lay in his path, sometimes using his hands on the ground for balance, hurrying past the creepy gallery of drawings and toward the cave entrance. She noticed then light flickering on the dark walls. When she heard the sputtering sizzle, she realized that it was light from a torch. She turned back around to see someone else, carrying a torch, appearing out of the darkness.
Rachel's jaw dropped.
It was Princess Violet.
"Well, well, if it isn't the orphan Rachel, come back to us," Violet said as she stuck the torch in a bracket on the rock wall before taking up a place beside the woman in black.
Rachel's eyes felt like they might pop out of her head. She couldn't seem to make her mouth close. Her voice had fled down into the pit of her stomach.
"Why, Violet, dear, I do believe you scared the little thing witless. Lose your tongue, little one?"
Princess Violet was the one who had lost her tongue. But now it was back. Somehow, as impossible as it seemed, it was back.
Princess Violet?
Violet's back stiffened as she straightened her broad shoulders. She seemed to be half again as big as the last time Rachel had seen her. She was meatier-looking, older-looking.
"Queen Violet now!"
Rachel blinked in astonishment.
"Queen?"
Violet smiled in a way that could have frozen a bonfire.
"Yes, that's right, Queen. My mother, you see, was murdered when that man Richard escaped. It was his doing. He is responsible for my mother's death, for the death of our beloved former queen.
He brought us all nothing but grief and terrible times. She heaved a sigh. Things have changed. I am queen now.
Rachel couldn't make it work in her head. Queen. It all seemed impossible. Mostly, though, it was dumbfounding that Violet could again speak after having lost her tongue.
A humorless smile spread on Violet's lips as her brow drew down. Kneel before your queen.
Rachel couldn't seem to make sense of the words.
Violet's hand came out of nowhere, striking Rachel so hard that it knocked her sprawling.
Kneel before your queen!
Violet's shriek echoed back and forth in blackness. Gasping in pain and shock, Rachel held one hand to the side of her face as she struggled to her knees. She felt warm blood running down her chin.
Violet was a lot stronger than before.
The painful slap was like her past slamming right back down on her, as if everything had been a dream and she was waking again to the nightmare of her former life. She was all alone again, with no Giller, no Richard, no Chase to help her. She was again helpless before Violet without a friend in the world.
Violet's smile had vanished. As she stared down at Rachel kneeling before her, her eyes narrowed in a way that made Rachel have to swallow.
He attacked me, you know, back when he was Seeker. Richard attacked me, hurt me, for no reason.
She planted her fists on her hips.
He hurt me bad. Attacked and hurt a child. My jaw was broken. My teeth were shattered. My tongue was severed, just as he had once promised to do. I was left mute.
Her voice lowered into a growl that chilled Rachel to the bone. But that was the least of my suffering. Violet took a breath to calm herself. With the palms of her hands, she smoothed down her pink satin dress at the hips. None of my mother's advisers were any help. They were bumbling fools when it came down to doing anything worthwhile. They offered endless potions and poultices and aromas and incantations. They said prayers and made offerings to the good spirits. They applied leeches and hot jars. None of it worked. My mother was buried without me there. I was unconscious at the time. Not even the stars had anything to say about my condition or chances. The advisors mostly stood around, wringing their hands, and probably plotting who would steal the crown when I finally died. I suspect that if it wasn't soon, then one of them would have helped me along into the afterlife with my mother. I heard their worried whispers about me becoming queen.
Violet took another calming breath. In the middle of my nightmare of pain and suffering, of anguish and grief, of my growing concern about being murdered, Six arrived and helped me. She gestured up at the woman standing beside her. Just when I needed it most, Six came along and helped save me. Helped save the crown and Tamarang itself, when no one else could or would.
But,
Rachel stammered, you are not old enough to be queen.
She knew it was a mistake the instant the words had left her tongue, before her better judgment had time to stop them.
Violet's other hand whipped around, slapping Rachel across the other cheek. Violet seized her by the hair and roughly pulled her back up onto her knees.
Rachel cupped a hand to the new throbbing ache and with the other hand wiped blood from her mouth.
Violet shrugged, indifferent to the pain and blood she had caused. Anyway, I grew up in the last few years. I'm no longer the child I was back then, the child you still think of me being, back when you lived here, enjoying our kindness and generosity.
Rachel didn't think that Violet had grown up enough to be a queen, but she knew better than to say so again. She also knew better than to think of enslavement as kindness.
Six helped me as I recovered. She saved me.
Rachel stared up at the pale, smiling face. I offered my services.
Violet welcomed me into the castle. Her mother's advisors certainly weren't doing her any good.
Six used her power to heal my broken and grossly infected jaw. I had grown weak from only being able to sip a thin broth. With Six's help, I was at last able to begin to eat again and recover my strength. New teeth even came in. I don't suppose that anyone ever grew a third set of teeth before, yet I did. But still I could not speak. So when I was well enough, strong enough, Six used her remarkable powers to grow me a new tongue.
Her fists tightened at her sides.
The tongue that I lost because of the Seeker.
The former Seeker,
Six corrected under her breath. The former Seeker, Violet acknowledged, considerably calmer. A smug smile returned to Violet's plump face. It was a smile that Rachel knew all too well. And now you have been brought back. Her tone expressed a threat that her words hadn't named.
What about all the others?
Rachel asked, trying to buy time to think.
All the Queen's advisers.
I am the Queen!
It seemed that, along with the rest of her, Violet's temper had gotten bigger as well. A gentle touch on the back from Six brought a brief glance up and smile to Violet's face. She again took a calming breath, almost as if she had been reminded to watch her manners. She finally answered Rachel's question.
I have no need for my mother's advisers. They were, after all, worthless. Six fills that role now, and does so much better than any of those fools. After all, none of them could grow me a new tongue. Now could they?
Rachel glanced up at Six. The wolf's grin was back. The ghostly blue eyes seemed to be staring right into Rachel's naked soul. Such a thing was far beyond their abilities, the woman said in a quiet voice, but one that carried the undertone of profound power. However, it was well within mine. Rachel wondered if Violet had ordered all the advisers put to death. The last time Rachel had been at the castle, Violet, at her mother's side, was just beginning to order executions. Now that she was queen, with Six to back her, there would be nothing to restrain Violet's whims.
Six gave me my tongue back, gave me my voice back. The Seeker thought he had taken all of that from me. But now I have it back. Tamarang is safely in my hands.
Had it not been so frightening a thought, so horrifying a concept, Rachel might have laughed at the very idea of Violet being queen. Rachel had been Violet's playmate, her companion, really nothing more than her personal slave. Violet's mother, Queen Melina, had gotten Rachel from an orphanage, intending her to be someone upon whom Violet could practice leadership, someone younger whom Violet could easily handle and abuse. Rachel had not only escaped, she had taken Queen Melina's precious box of Orden with her, eventually giving it over to Richard and Zed and Chase. That had been a long time back. Violet looked to be about in her middle teens by now, although Rachel wasn't good at guessing older people's ages. She was a lot bigger than the last time Rachel had seen her, that much was for sure. Her dull hair was even longer. Her bones had gotten heavier, thicker. Like the rest of her, her face was still plump, but with those small, dark, calculating eyes, it had lost its childlike quality. Her chest was no longer flat, either, but had grown womanly. She looked like an adult just about to emerge from her cocoon. She had always been much older than Rachel, but now she seemed to have spurted up and widened the gap. Even so, she didn't seem anywhere near old enough to be a queen. But queen she was. Rachel's knees, naked against the rock, were hurting something fierce. She didn't dare to ask to get up, though. Instead, she asked a question. Violet, smack! Before she had time to think, Violet had struck, seemingly out of nowhere, as if she had been waiting for an excuse. Rachel's vision swam sickeningly. It felt like the blow might have knocked teeth loose. Rachel gingerly felt with her tongue before she was sure they were all still in place.
Queen Violet, Violet growled. Don't make that mistake again, or you will be put to torture as an instigator of treason.
Rachel swallowed back the lump of terror. Yes, Queen Violet. Violet smiled at the triumph. She was indeed the queen. Rachel knew that Violet had a taste for only the most exquisite things, the most elaborate decoration, whether it be draperies or dishes, the most beautiful dresses and the most precious jewels. She insisted on surrounding herself with the best of everything, and that had been back when she'd only been a princess. That made it seem all the stranger that she would be in a cave.
Queen Violet,
What are you doing in this awful place? Violet stared down at her a moment, then waggled what looked like a piece of chalk before Rachel's face.
My heritage. My inheritance.
Rachel didn't understand. Your what?
My gift.
She shrugged offhandedly.
Well, not exactly the gift, but something akin to it. You see, I come from a long line of artists. You remember James, the court artist?
Rachel nodded. He had only one hand.
Yes,
Violet drawled.
A man a little too forward for his own good. Just because he was a relative of the Queen, he thought that he could get away with certain indiscretions.
He was wrong. Rachel blinked.
Relative? Distant cousin or something like that. He shared some little trace of the royal bloodline. That exceptional bloodline carries a unique gift for artistry. The family of the rulers of Tamarang still carry the thread of that ancient talent. My mother didn't have the ability, but through that bloodline, it turns out that she did pass it along to me. At the time, though, the only one we knew of who still had that rare talent was James. Thus it came to be that he served as the court artist, served the crown, my mother, Queen Melina. The seeker, the previous seeker, Richard, before he caused the trouble that resulted in the murder of my mother, also murdered James. Our land was, for the first time in history, without the services of an artist to protect the crown. At the time, we weren't aware that I, in fact, carry the ancient talent. She gestured to the tall woman beside her.
Six saw it in me, though. She told me of my remarkable ability. She has been helping me to learn to use it, guiding me in my art lessons. A lot of people were opposed to me becoming queen, some even among the crown's highest advisers. Fortunately, Six told me of the covert plots.
She lifted the chalk before Rachel's face.
The traitors found drawings of themselves down here on these walls. I made sure that everyone knows what happens to traitors. With that, and with Six's help and counsel, I became queen. People no longer dare oppose me.
When she had lived at the castle before, Rachel had thought that Violet was dangerous in the extreme. She'd had no idea at the time just how much more dangerous she would become. Rachel felt a sense of crushing hopelessness. Violet and Six glanced up when they heard Samuel rushing back in. Fearing that Violet was liable to whack her again, Rachel decided not to turn and look. She could hear Samuel panting, though, as he got close.
Violet swished her hand, commanding Rachel aside and out of the way. Rachel immediately scrambled to comply, only too happy to be out of the reach of Violet's arm, if not her authority.
Samuel had a leather bag held closed with a drawstring. He set the bag down carefully and opened it. He looked up at Six. She rolled her hand, urging him to get on with it. It appeared to be a box of some kind. When it came out of the bag, Rachel saw that it was as black as doom itself. She thought that they all very well might be sucked into that black void and vanish into the underworld. With one hand, Samuel held the sinister thing up to Six. Smiling, she lifted it out of his hand.
As promised, she said to Violet, I present you with Queen Violet's box of Orden.
Rachel remembered Queen Melina lifting that same box with the same kind of awed reverence. Except that now it wasn't all covered in the silver, gold, and jewels. Zed had told Rachel that the real box of Orden had been under those jewels. This had to be that box that had all along been inside when Rachel had spirited it away from the castle just as Wizard Giller had asked her to do. Now Giller was dead. Richard no longer had his sword, and Rachel was back in the clutches of Violet. And now Violet had herself a precious box of Orden, just as her mother had.
Violet smirked. You see, Rachel, what need have I of those old useless advisers? Could they have accomplished any of what I have accomplished? You see, unlike those weak people you threw in with, I always persevere until I succeed. That's what it takes to be a queen. I have the box of Orden back. I have you back.
She waggled the chalk again.
And I will have Richard back to face his punishment.
Six sighed.
enough of this happy reunion. You have what you asked for. Samuel and I need to go have a talk about his next assignment, and you need to get back to your art lesson. Violet smiled conspiratorially.
Yes, my lesson.
She glared down at Rachel.
There is an iron box waiting for you back at the castle, and then there is the matter of your punishment.
Six bowed her head. I will be off then, my queen.
Violet flicked her hand in a gesture of dismissal.
Six grasped Samuel's upper arm and started away with him. He had to watch his balance to keep his footing as he stepped over and around rocks. Six seemed to glide through the dim light without any trouble at all.
Come along,
Violet said in the kind of pretend cheerful tone that made Rachel's blood run cold.
You can watch me draw.
As Violet grabbed the torch, Rachel stood on wobbly legs, then followed her queen. The light of the flagging flame illuminating walls covered with endless drawings of terrible things being done to people. There was not a spot on the walls that didn't have some sort of horrific scene. Rachel missed Chase, something fierce. Missed his reassurance, his smile when she had done a lesson well, his comforting hand on her shoulder. She loved him so much. And Samuel had killed him, killed all her hopes and dreams. She felt numb despair as she followed Violet deeper into the darkness, deeper into the madness. Chapter 22. Nikki spotted Richard far off down the long rampart, standing at the crenellated outer wall not far from the base of a soaring tower, gazing out over the deserted city far below. Twilight had muted the colors of the dying day, turning the distant rolling summer green fields to gray. Kara stood not far from his side, silent but watchful. Nikki knew Richard well enough that she could easily read the heightened tension in his body. She knew Kara well enough to see the reflection of that stress lurking in her intently calm appearance. Nikki pressed a fist over the knot of anxiety tightening in her middle. Overhead the slate-gray clouds roiled, spitting an occasional fat drop of rain. Distant thunder rumbled through the mountain passes, promising a tempestuous night to come. Despite the dark, seething clouds, the air was strangely still. The heat of the day had abruptly vanished, as if fleeing before the storm that was about to break. As she came to a stop, Nikki rested a hand on the crenellated wall and took a deep breath of the humid air. Rika said that you needed to see me. She said it was urgent. Richard looked the match for the brewing storm. I have to leave, at once. Nikki had somehow expected just that. She glanced past Richard to Kara, but the moored Sith showed no reaction. Richard had been brooding for days. He'd been quietly distant as he considered everything he had learned from Jebra and Shota. Zed had advised Nikki to leave him to his deliberation. Nikki had not needed such advice. She probably knew his darker moods better than anyone. "I'm going with you," she said, making it clear that she was leaving no room for discussion. He nodded absently. It will be good to have you with me, especially for this. Nikki was relieved not to have him argue, but the knot of anxiety tightened over the last part of what he'd said. There was a palpable sense of danger in the air. At that moment, her concern was to ensure that, whatever he was about to do, he was as well protected as she could manage. And Kara is going too. Still, he gazed off into the distance. Of course. She realized that he was looking south. Now that Tom and Friedrich are back, Tom will insist on coming along as well. His talents will be valuable. Tom was a member of an elite corps of protectors to the Lord Rawl. Despite his amiable appearance, Tom was more than formidable in his duty. Men like him were not advanced to such trusted positions of protection to the Lord Rawl because they had nice smiles. Like other Dharan protectors to the Lord Rawl, Tom had come to feel passionately about his duty to protect Richard. "He can't come with us," Richard said. "We're going in the Slith, Only Kara, you, and me are able to travel in the Sliff.
Nicky swallowed at the thought of such a journey.
And where are we going, Richard?
At long last, his gray eyes turned to her. He gazed into her eyes that way he had about him, like he was looking into her soul.
I figured it out, he said.
You figured what out?
What I must do.
Nicky could feel her fingers tingling with a shapeless dread. The look of terrible resolve in his gray eyes made her knees weak.
And what is it that you must do, Richard?
He puzzled a moment.
Did I ever tell you thanks for stopping Shoto when you did, when she was touching me?
Nicky was not disconcerted by Richard's abrupt change of topic. She had learned that it was Richard's way. It was especially characteristic when he was greatly troubled. The more agitated he was, it seemed that there were all the more things going on in his head at the same time, as if his thoughts were in a whirlwind of inner activity that pulled everything up into that tumultuous rush of deliberation.
You told me, Richard. About 100 times, she thought.
He nodded slightly.
Well, thanks.
His voice had turned absent, distant, as he descended back into the dark depths of some inner equation upon which the future hinged. She was doing something painful to you, wasn't she? It was not a question, but a statement, that Nicky had come to believe more and more in the days following Shota's visit. Nicky didn't know what Shota had done, but she wished she had not allowed even that brief touch. There was no telling how much the witch-woman could have conveyed in that touch, even as abbreviated as it had been. Lightning, after all, was brief as well. Richard had never said what Shota had shown him, but it was ground that Nicky, for some reason, feared to tread upon. Richard heaved a sigh.
Yes, she was. She was showing me the truth. That truth is, in part, how I've come to understand at last what I must do. As much as I dread it.
When he drifted into silence, Nicky patiently prodded him.
So, what have you figured out you must do?
Richard's fingers tightened on the stone as he looked out again over the darkening countryside far below, and then to the somber jumble of mountains rising up beyond.
I was right in the beginning.
His gaze turned to Kara. Right when I took you and Kaelin away to the mountains far back in Westland.
Kara frowned.
I remember you saying that we were going back into those deserted mountains because you had come to understand that we could not win the war by fighting the army of the Imperial Order. You said that you could not lead them in such a battle that they were sure to lose.
Richard nodded. And I was right. I know that now. We can't win against their army.
Shota helped me to see that. She may have been trying to convince me that I must fight that battle, but in part because of all that she and Jebra showed me, I know now that we can't win it.
Now I know what I must do.
And what would that be? Nicky pressed.
Richard finally pushed away from the stone Merlin.
We have to go. I don't have time to lay it all out right now.
Nicky started after him. I threw some things together. They're ready.
Richard, why can't you tell me what you've decided?
I will, he said. Later.
You're wasting your time, Kara said under her breath to Nicky as she fell in with her behind Richard.
I've already paddled up that creek until I got too tired to paddle any more.
Richard, hearing Kara's remark, took Nicky by the arm and pulled her forward.
I'm not finished thinking it all through. I need to finish putting it all together. I'll explain it when we get there. Explain it to everyone. But right now we don't have the time. All right?
Get where? Nicky asked.
To the Daharan army. Jagang's main force will soon be heading up into Dahara. I have to tell our army that we have no chance to win the battle that is coming for them.
That ought to cheer their day, Kara said. Nothing makes a soldier feel better on the eve of battle than their leader telling them that they are about to lose the battle and die.
You want me to tell them a lie instead? He asked.
Kara's only answer was a scowl. At the end of the rampart, Richard pulled open the heavy oak door at the base of the tower. Inside was a room where some of the lamps were already lit. Nicky could hear people rushing up the stone steps to the side.
Richard! It was Zed, following behind the big, blonde-headed Daharan, Tom. Richard halted, waiting for his grandfather to reach the top of the steps and make it into the simple stone room. Zed rushed closer, gulping air.
"Richard, what's going on? Rika came by in a rush saying that you were leaving."
Richard nodded. "I wanted you to know that I've got to go, but I won't be gone for long. I'll be back in a few days. Hopefully, in the meantime, you and Nathan and Anne can find out something in the books that will be helpful with the chainfire spell. Maybe you can even work on coming up with some solution to the contamination from the chimes." Zed waved irritably at the suggestion.
"While we're at it, would you like me to cure the sky of that thunderstorm?"
"Zed, don't be angry with me, please. I have to go."
"All right, but where are you going, and why?"
"I'm ready, Lord Rawl," Tom said as he hurried into the room. "I'm sorry," Richard told him, "but you can't go. We're going to need to go in the Slif." Zed threw his arms up in the air.
"The Slif? You do your best to convince me that magic is failing, and now you intend to put your life in the hands of a creature of magic? Are you losing your mind, Richard? What's going on?"
"I'm aware of the danger, but I must take the risk." Richard gestured. "You know that starburst symbol on the door of the First Wizard's Enclave up there?" When Zed nodded, Richard tapped the top of his silver wristband. "It's the same as this one here."
"What about it?" Zed asked.
"Remember I told you that it has meaning? It's an admonition not to allow your vision to lock on any one thing. It's a warning to look everywhere at once, to see nothing to the exclusion of everything else. It means you mustn't allow the enemy to draw your attention and make you focus on what he wishes you to see. If you do, you will be blind to everything else. That's what I've been doing. Jigang has been forcing me, forcing everyone, to focus on one thing. Like a fool, I've been doing just that."
"His army," Nikki guessed.
"That's what you mean? That we've all been focusing on his invasion force?"
"That's right. This starburst means that you must open to all there is, never settling on just one thing, even when cutting your enemy. It means that instead of focusing on one thing, you must open your mind to everything, even when it is necessary to keep that one central threat at the center of your attention."
Zed cocked his head.
"Richard, you've got to focus on the threat that's about to kill you. His army is millions of men strong. They're coming to crush all opposition and enslave us all."
"I know. That's why we can't fight them. We will lose."
Zed's face went crimson.
"So you propose to allow their army to roll into the new world unopposed? Your plan is to let Jigang's army freely overrun cities and allow to happen all the things that Jebra told us had happened in Ebenicia? You want to so easily allow all those people to be slaughtered or enslaved?"
"Think of the solution," Richard reminded his grandfather, "not the problem."
"Well, not very comforting advice to those having their throats cut."
Richard froze and stared at his grandfather, seemingly struck silent by Zed's words.
"Look," Richard finally said, running his fingers back through his hair, "I don't have time for this right now. I'll talk to you about it when I get back. Time is of the essence. I've already wasted far too much of it. I only hope that we still have enough time left."
"Enough time for what?" Zed roared.
Nikki heard footsteps rushing up the stairwell. Jebra dashed into the room.
"What's going on?"
she asked Zed. Zed waved a hand in Richard's direction. "My grandson has decided that we must lose the war, that we must not fight Jigang's army."
"Lord Rawl, you can't be serious," she said.
"You can't seriously consider allowing those brutes."
Jebra's voice trailed off as she stepped forward, peering up at Richard. She stilled in mid-stride. She staggered back a step. The blood drained from her face. Her jaw dropped open. Her jaw trembled as she tried, without success, to bring forth words. Her features slackened with dread. Her blue eyes rolled back in her head as she fainted. As she toppled back, Tom caught her in his arms and laid her gently on the granite floor. Everyone closed in around the unconscious woman.
"What happened?" Tom asked.
"I don't know," Zed said as he knelt down beside the woman, pressing his fingers to her forehead. "She's fainted, but I'm not sure why."
Richard headed for the door that opened to the iron stairs running down the inside of the tower.
"I'll leave you to take care of her, Zed. You're the expert at healing. She's in good hands. I can't afford to waste any more time right now. He turned back from the doorway. I'll be back as soon as I can, promise. We shouldn't be more than a few days. But Richard... He had already started down the iron steps. I'll be back, he called up at them, his voice echoing from the gloom. Without hesitation, Kara followed after him down into the dark tower. Nikki didn't want to let him get too far without her, but she knew that he would have to call the Slith, so she had a few moments. As Zed checked different spots on Jebra's head, Nikki squatted down beside the unconscious Jebra, across from him. Nikki felt the woman's brow. She's burning up. Zed looked up in a way that nearly stopped Nikki's heart. It's a vision. How do you know? I know about seers in general, and this one in particular. She's had a powerful vision. Jebra is more sensitive than most seers. Her emotions, with a certain kind of vision, sometimes overcome her. This vision had to have been something that was so powerful it rendered her unconscious. Do you think it was about Richard? There's no way to tell, the old wizard said. She will have to be the one to tell us. Zed may not have been willing to venture a guess, but Jebra had looked up into Richard's eyes just before she fainted. Nikki didn't have time to be discreet. She couldn't allow Richard to leave without her, and she knew that he would if she wasn't there when he was ready to go. But at the same time, she couldn't leave without knowing if Jebra had had a vision about him that could reveal something important. Nikki slipped her hand under the woman's neck, pressing her fingers to the base of Jebra's skull. "What are you doing?" Zed asked suspiciously. "If you're doing what I think you are, that's not just reckless, but dangerous." "So is ignorance," Nikki said as she released a flow of power. Jebra's eyes popped open. She gasped. "No." "There, there," Zed comforted. "It's all right, my dear. We're right here with you." "What did you see?" Nikki asked, getting right to the point. Jebra's panicked eyes turned to Nikki. She reached up and snatched the collar of Nikki's dress. "Don't leave him alone." There was no need for Nikki to ask who Jebra was talking about. "Why? What did you see?" "Don't leave him alone. Don't let him out of your sight, not for an instant." "Why?" Nikki asked again. "What will happen if he is left alone?" "If you leave him alone, he will be lost to us." "How? What did you see?" Jebra reached up and with both fists pulled Nikki's face closer. "Go. Don't let him be alone. What I saw does not matter. If he's not alone, then it can't happen. Do you understand? If you let him get separated from you and Kara, it will not matter what I saw. It won't matter for any of us. I can't tell you the means of separation, only that no matter what, you must not let it happen. That's all that's important. Go. Stay with him." Nikki swallowed as she nodded. "You'd better do as she says," Zed told Nikki. "There's nothing I can do in this. It's up to you." He reached out and grasped her hand, not as first wizard, but as Richard's grandfather. "Stay with him, Nikki. Protect him. In so many ways he's the Seeker, the Lord Rahl, the leader of the Daharan Empire, but in other ways he's still a woods guide at heart. He's our Richard. Protect him, please. We're all depending on you." Nikki stared at him. At an appeal that seemed unexpectedly personal. An appeal that seemed to rise above all the wider needs of protecting the freedom of the new world, and reduced it all to a simple love for Richard, the man. She understood in that instant that without the sincere and simple concern for Richard as an individual, none of the rest of it mattered. As she started to rise, Jebra pulled Nikki back down. "This is not a maybe kind of vision, a possibility. This is certain. Don't let him be alone, or he will be at their mercy." "Whose mercy?" Jebra bit her lower lip as her blue eyes welled up with tears. "The Dark Witch." Nikki felt a shudder of icy dread ripple up her shoulders. "Go," Jebra whispered. "Please go, hurry. Don't let him leave without you." Nikki sprang up and rushed across the room. At the doorway, she paused and turned back. Her heart was pounding so hard that it made her sway on her feet. "I swear, Zed, he will have my protection as long as I draw breath." She watched as Zed nodded, a tear running down his weathered cheek. "Hurry." Nikki turned and ran down the iron steps, taking them two at a time, her footfalls echoing around the enormous tower. She wondered what else Jebra saw in her vision that awaited Richard if he became separated from them. if he was left alone. But in the end, Nicky decided that it didn't really matter what that visionary fate was. It only mattered that, no matter what, Nicky not allow it to happen. Bats fluttered in undulating clouds up through the tower, funneling out through the open windows at the top, intent on their nightly hunt as Nicky raced down the steps. The rushing sound of thousands of webbed wings made it seem the tower was exhaling in a long, low moan. She passed iron doors on landings without pause. She sometimes had to snatch the rail to keep her footing. At the bottom, she raced around the walkway that surrounded the fetid water standing at the bottom of the tower. The black water rippled as small creatures slipped into the inky sanctuary. Nicky ran in through the doorway that had been blasted open when Richard had destroyed the great barrier that had once separated the old world from the new. The towers that powered that barrier had stood since the Great War, 3,000 years before. In more recent times, Jagang and his army of the Imperial Order had been kept at bay, unable to cross that barrier. But Richard had destroyed those towers in order to be able to return to the New World after having been held at the Palace of the Prophets, and as a result, the Imperial Order had been loosed on the New World. The war was not Richard's fault, but it could not have been rekindled without that act. Richard and Kara were standing, waiting, on the wall of the Great Well of the Slith, the creature that had been walled away along with the Old World for all the time that the Great Barrier had stood. Behind Richard and Kara, the quicksilver face of the Slith watched Nicky as she hurried into the room.
"Do you wish to travel?"
the Slith asked in that eerie voice that echoed around the room.
"Yes, I wish to travel," Nicky said breathlessly as she scooped up her pack.
Kara must have put it there for her.
"Thanks,"
she said to the moored Sith.
Richard held his hand out as Nicky slipped an arm through a strap and lifted the pack onto her back.
"Come on."
Nicky took his hand, letting him hoist her up onto the wall with one mighty pull. Nicky's heart felt as if it were coming up into her throat. She had traveled before, so she knew the overwhelming ecstasy of the experience. And yet she could not help being afraid to breathe in the living quicksilver of the Slith. Such a concept just went against the very idea of the breath of life.
"You will be pleased," the Slith said as Nicky joined the others.
Nicky didn't argue. "Let's go," Richard said. "I wish to travel." A shiny arm lifted out of the pool to surround Richard and Kara, but not Nicky.
"Wait," Nicky said. "I must go with them."
The Slith stilled. "Listen to me, Richard. You have to take Kara and my hands. Don't let go for anything."
"Nicky, you've done this before. It will be..."
"Listen, Kara and I are trusting you, and you have to trust us. You can't get separated from us, not for anything, not for so much as an instant. If that happens, then you are lost to us. If that happens, then whatever you have planned won't happen."
Richard studied her face silently for a moment. Did Jebra have a vision of something happening?
"Only if you get separated from us. Only if you are alone."
What did she see?
"The witchwoman, Six." Jebra called her the Dark Witch.
Richard studied her face a moment. "Shota is going after Six."
"That may be, but Six has already usurped Shota's authority in her own territory."
"Maybe for the moment, but I'd not want to be her when Shota catches her. Shota covered her throne with the hide of the last person who came to take her home, and he was a wizard."
"I don't doubt how dangerous Shota is, but we don't know how dangerous Six is. The gift is different in different individuals. Shota could in the end turn out to be no match for Six's ability. I do know that the Sisters of the Dark were afraid of her. Jebra had a terrible vision and says that you must not be allowed to be alone. I don't intend to allow her vision any chance to come to pass."
He must have read the resolve in Nicky's face because he nodded. "All right." He took her hand and then took Kara's.
"Don't let go then, and then we won't have to worry about it."
Nicky squeezed his hand in agreement. She leaned past him to address Kara. "Do you understand? We can't let him out of our sight. Not for an instant."
Kara's brow drew down in a dark frown. "Since when have I ever wanted to allow him out of my sight?"
"Where do you wish to travel?"
the Slith asked. Nicky glanced to Richard and Kara and realized that the question was directed to her.
"To where they are going."
The silver face turned sly.
I cannot reveal what my other clients do when they are in me. Tell me what you wish, and I will please you.
Nikki twitched a frown at Richard. She never reveals anything about anyone else. It's a kind of professional confidence.
We're going to the People's Palace.
The People's Palace, Nikki said. I wish to travel to the People's Palace. She's going with Kara and me, Richard told the Slith. To the same place. Do you understand? She is to stay with us as we travel there.
Yes, Master. We will travel.
The face, looking like a highly polished statue, smiled.
You will be pleased.
The liquid silver arm tightened around all three of them, drawing them off the wall. Nikki's hand tightened on Richard's. As they plunged into the total darkness of the slough, Nikki held her breath. She knew she had to breathe, but the very idea of breathing the silvery liquid terrified her.
Breathe.
At last she did, a desperate gasp drawing the slough into her lungs. Colors, light, and shapes melted together all around her in a spectacular display. Nikki tightly held Richard's hand as they glided into the silken distance. It was a glorious, lazy, floating sensation of a headlong rush at impossible speed. She drew in another dizzying breath of the slough's essence. It was a glorious release from everything that haunted her, from the crushing weight on her soul. She was left with only that connection to Richard. There was nothing else. There was no one else.
It was rapture.
She never wanted it to end. Chapter 23 Kaelin watched as the three sisters peered into the distance, watching for any movement. With the sun going down, the shadows were beginning to melt together into a gloomy haze. At the horizon to the south, a sliver of fading daylight shone beneath menacing gray clouds that towered into a dark violet sky. The cloud tops were touched by a wash of red light that lent the evening an odd, dreamlike quality. The sky in this place, so often filled with monumental, billowing clouds, seemed overpoweringly immense, leaving Kaelin feeling tiny and insignificant. The flat plains to the south stretched endlessly to the lonely horizon. Little vegetation grew in such a desolate place, and what did grow was found mostly in the low-lying places. The clouds sweeping across the landscape dragged columns of rain, but as vast as the place was, the rains never seemed any more than a distant, isolated phenomenon. Kaelin suspected that if one were to stand in the same spot for a year, waiting for one of those random showers to pass overhead, it would likely not happen. The barren landscape made life seem fragile and forlorn. Only the mountains to the north and east seemed able to comb rain from the parade of clouds. As a result, the trees didn't venture down from their mountain refuge. When the horses snorted and stamped their hooves, Kaelin pulled the reins tighter and absently rubbed one of the animals under its jaw to reassure it that all was well. The horse gently nudged her, wanting more. As she waited, Kaelin turned away from the haunting desolation and gave the horse a more attentive scratch. In the distance, she could see where the wall of mountains dwindled into a massive headland. That headland, like the tail of some sleeping beast, looked to be the southern tip of the mountains they had been following south. Kaelin wished she were back in those mountains. The mountains gave her a sense of sanctuary, probably because, unlike the open plains, she didn't feel like anyone for miles around could see her. Out on the plain she felt naked and exposed. She realized that she didn't really know why she should feel that way, since she could hardly be in a worse circumstance than being a forgotten slave to the sisters. Kaelin thought that she could see what looked like buildings up on the distant headland. If her eyes weren't tricking her, the buildings looked like they were probably no more than ruins. If they really were buildings, then few of the structures appeared to have roofs. What at first made no sense finally began to, when she considered if what might have been walls had actually crumbled long ago. That would explain the odd shapes. She didn't see any sign of people. They, too, were probably long forgotten. Even if they really were abandoned buildings, long-deserted places made the sisters no less wary than everything else did. Their wariness seemed to be born of a sense of complete and total dominion nearly within their grasp. In this place, though, Kaelin shared their edginess. The three sisters had been silent for most of the day, speaking only when necessary. The back of Kaelin's shoulder still throbbed in pain where Sister Ulysia had unexpectedly struck her. It had not been punishment for any transgression, real or imagined, but rather had been delivered with a stern warning not to cause any trouble. The sisters sometimes sought to express their superiority over others, even if it was by showing that they could hurt Kaelin just because they wanted to. She had to school her thoughts lest one of the sisters pick up on what Kaelin thought of her treatment. She'd swallowed her dignity along with her thoughts and simply said, "Yes, sister." Kaelin didn't think that it was a good idea to go stumbling around in the dark, especially when they were beginning to come upon a landscape deeply rutted and eroded in places by runoff from the high ground. The horses could easily break a leg in such conditions. But in their ambition to get to Casca, the sisters hadn't wanted to stop when evening had begun to engulf them. What the sisters wanted, the sisters got. Kaelin wasn't looking forward to eventually setting up camp in the dark. "I think there's someone out there," Sister Amina said in a quiet voice as she stared out into the darkness. "I sense something, too," Sister Cecilia murmured. Sister Amina glanced over expectantly. "Maybe it's Tovey." "Could be nothing more than a wild mule." Sister Ulysia didn't appear to be in a mood to stand around speculating. "Come on." She glanced back at Kaelin. "Stay close." "Yes, sister," Kaelin said as she handed each sister the reins to their horse. Sister Cecilia, older than the rest of them, grunted with the effort of swinging her tired muscles up into her saddle. "My memories of the rare maps down in the vaults at the Palace of the Prophets tell me that we should be getting close to the place." "I recall seeing that ancient map," Sister Ulysia said, once seated atop her horse. "It called this place the Deep Nothing. That would mean that it has to be Casca up on that distant headland." Sister Amina heaved an impatient sigh as she urged her horse on after the others. "Then we will at last find Tovey here." "And when we finally join up with her," Sister Cecilia said, "she is going to have some explaining to do." Sister Amina gestured off toward the distant headland. "You know Tovey, always ignoring what she's supposed to do because she thinks she knows best. She's the most obstinate woman I've ever met." As far as Kaelin was concerned, Amina had little room to talk. "We'll see how obstinate she is when I have my fingers around her throat," Sister Cecilia said. Sister Amina urged her horse up beside Sister Ulysia. "You don't think she could be up to no good, do you, Ulysia?" "Tovey?" Sister Ulysia glanced back over her shoulder. "No, not really. She may be exasperating at times, but she has the same goal as do the rest of us. Besides, she knows as well as we do that we need all three of the boxes. She knows what's involved and what's at stake. We will soon have the three boxes all back together again. That's all that really matters. And we will already be in Casca. So I suppose it wouldn't really have done us any good to catch up with Tovey before now. We still would have had to come here anyway." "But why would she have taken off the way she did?" Sister Cecilia pressed. Sister Ulysia shrugged. Unlike the other two, she seemed to be somewhat at ease, now that Casca was in sight. "It could be nothing more than that she discovered Imperial Order troops nearby, and she simply wanted to avoid any possibility of trouble, so she left the area. She probably was using her head, that's all. She knew we had to come here. She probably saw a chance to slip away and took it. We're better served by such caution. She was, in the end, going to where we planned on going all along, so I don't really see what mischief she could be up to." "I suppose." Sister Cecilia seemed somewhat disappointed not to have a villain upon whom to fixate her anger. They rode in silence for nearly an hour more before it became apparent to the sisters that riding over such ground in the dark might not only risk breaking a horse's leg, but one of their necks as well. As far as Kaelin could tell, they weren't much closer to the headland than they had been for most of the day. Out on the plain, distances were far greater than they appeared to be. What at first seemed to be a place only a couple of miles distant could turn out to take days to reach. The sisters, despite their eagerness to get to Casca and Tovi, were tired and ready to stop for the night. Sister Alicia dismounted, handing the reins to Kaelin. "Get camp set up. We're all hungry." Kaelin dipped her head. "Yes, sister." She immediately hobbled all the horses so they couldn't wander off, then made her way around to the side of the pack animals to start getting out their gear. She was dead tired, but knew that it would probably be hours before she would have a chance to get any sleep. The camp had to be set up, food had to be prepared, and then the horses had to be fed, watered, and groomed for the night. Sister Alicia took hold of Sister Armina's arm and pulled her close. "While we're making camp, I want you to go out there and check the area. I want to know if it's just a mule." Sister Armina nodded and immediately set out on foot into the darkness. Sister Cecilia watched Sister Armina dissolve into the night. "Do you really think it's a mule?" Sister Alicia cast her a dark look. "If it is a mule, it's staying the same distance away as we travel. If it's someone watching us, then Armina will find them." Kaelin pulled out the bedrolls when the sisters asked for something softer to sit on other than the barren ground. She then pulled out one of the pots so she could get some dinner started. "No fire tonight," Sister Alicia said when she saw Kaelin with the pot. Kaelin stared at her a moment. "What would you like for dinner then, sister?" "There is bannock left over. We can have that and some dried meats. We have pine nuts as well." She gazed out into the night. "I don't want a fire out here in the open, where anyone from horizon to horizon could see us. Just get out one of the smaller lanterns." Kaelin could not imagine what the sisters had to worry about. She handed Sister Cecilia the lantern. The sister lit it with a flick of a finger, then set it on the ground before her and Sister Alicia. It wasn't much light to see by as Kaelin finished unpacking, but at least it was better than nothing. There had been times in the past when patrols of soldiers happened on them. The sisters had never been especially spooked by such unexpected encounters with hostile forces. The sisters had dispatched the soldiers without any problem. Or mercy. When they had run into patrols, the sisters were careful not to allow any witnesses to get away, apparently so that there wouldn't be any chance of reports getting back to the army. Kaelin supposed that it was possible that such reports could result in great numbers of angry men coming after them. The sisters didn't appear especially concerned about that possibility. It seemed more likely that they simply had business and they didn't want to be slowed for anything. Getting to Tovi and the last box was of paramount importance to them, and they had driven hard to get this far this quickly. Kaelin was somewhat surprised that they had not caught Tovi before now, especially since nothing seemed anywhere near as important to the sisters as their precious boxes. Except that they were Lord Rawl's boxes. The sisters had stolen them from Richard Rawl's palace. On one occasion, in their rush, they had come across a large detachment of the big Imperial Order brutes. The sisters had been impatient to get past the soldiers, to get on with their business with the boxes, but the men appeared in no hurry to move on out of the way. The sisters waited until the middle of the night and then walked through the encampment of sleeping men. Any time a man saw them, one of the sisters cast out a silent spell that dispatched the man without any ado. The sisters had shown no compunction about killing any man who happened to be in their way. They moved through the camp quietly, fearlessly, and deliberately. Kaelin saw a lot of men die that night. To the sisters, it had been no more eventful than stepping on ants pestering them at camp. But that had been a long time ago, and they had not seen any troops since. The Imperial Order army was now far distant behind them, and for quite some time had no longer been a consideration. That didn't mean, however, that there couldn't be other hazards, and so the sisters were frequently as nervous as cats. Without warning, however, they could easily turn as dangerous as vipers. Long after Sister Armina returned without finding anyone about, and the three sisters had eaten, Kaelin still worked to finish her chores before she was allowed to eat. She was currying the horses when she thought that she heard the soft sound of footsteps on the hard scrabble ground. The sound brought her out of her thoughts about the soldiers. Her hand with the curry brush paused. She looked over her shoulder and was startled to see a slender girl with short, dark hair standing timidly just at the edge of the faint lantern light. With the moon only occasionally peeking out from between the passing clouds, the camp was mostly left to the light of the single lantern back by the sisters, so it was hard to see. But Kaelin could see well enough to see the young woman's pale eyes staring at her. In those eyes was the clear look of cognition. The girl saw Kaelin. "Please," the girl said. Kaelin crossed her lips with a finger, lest the sisters hear the girl. Just like the man back at the inn, this girl saw and remembered Kaelin. Kaelin was astonished, and at the same time fearful that the same thing would happen to the girl as had happened to the man.
This is the end of disc number 8. Please continue listening on disc number 9.